The meeting we had in the community hall is the informal opening of the retreat. And the formal opening of the retreat is this meeting now here in the upper, on the first and second floor, and the walking hall and this meditation hall and people out in the foyer and maybe other places. But it's a little more formal occasion where we're just in the context of now having sat quietly for a few minutes. And now I'd like to welcome you again. And the depth of my heart, the depths of whatever ways the Dharma has impacted me over this lifetime of mine, I want to welcome you here into this Dharma field, into this Dharma practice community. And we really want this place to be a place that anybody in our society, anybody in this world who wants to practice feels comfortable, more than welcome, but more than welcome and comfortable, like they feel like they belong, like it's their place for the week they're here. And so we extend our invitation, you know, to all kinds of people who sometimes feel like they are overlooked or worse, somehow excluded. And sometimes it's based on gender. There's so many genders that are excluded, and sometimes it's based on ethnicity or race, body type, education, whether or not you have a police record. All kinds of abilities, that physical abilities, and it goes on, a list of things that people who somehow don't get included or recognized, or people who don't feel welcomed. And we want to say everyone here, so everyone's welcome. That's our wish and desire. And if you don't feel welcome, let us know, because maybe we can change something. And also, something that I would have thought was impossible a few years ago, somehow I would have been maybe a little bit more resistant of, is having a camera in the meditation hall and a computer somewhere else, and having people kind of participate in this kind of technological way. But I welcome all of you who are there doing this as a webcast retreat. I cherish it now. This pandemic has taught me the tremendous value of participating in Dharma online in this way. And now I feel like it's an enhancement to have this in the meditation hall, rather than distraction or somehow bringing in this impure technology, whatever the thoughts I had. Now I feel that it enhances us. I feel like the Dharma now is even more inclusive of all kinds, of all ranges and of human experience and areas and lives. So those of you online, thank you for being here, and your presence, your participation in the practice is a support for the people here who are doing it at IRC, and I hope that those of us here practicing here is a support for you, and that somehow it's a mutual event that we're doing here. In order to help make this a safe place for everyone, we practice what's called noble silence. It's a practice of not having unnecessary communication during the retreat. And it means that we never talk to another retreatant unless you have a particular, like a work meditation, you're both doing dishwashing together or pot washing together, and you have to, for the work, it makes sense to have some conversation about the work. And also there should be no nonverbal communication. We generally don't make eye contact. And part of the reason for this is that, well, first I want to say that this can be very hard for people who come for their first retreat. Because out in the wider world, that kind of behavior, not making eye contact and being silent, is behavior which kind of excludes people and sometimes, you know, denies their humanity even, that they're kind of, you don't count, and I'm going to ignore you. And so some people who come here will come with those experiences even, and it's hard to be here. But it's by naming and saying that that's not the case here. Just it's a practice here of partly too, so we can be internal and really be with our own inner process, that we do that, and partly so that we can allow other people to be in their process. There are people who come here to the practice here, for whom the practice is quite difficult and very, very makes them very vulnerable, and. Even nonverbal communication and contact can be very challenging for the place they come into. And so we want to be very careful for each other. And it also helps everyone to feel like they're welcome to just, they can relax and be themselves if they know that they don't have to negotiate social relationships and that are, you know, it's hard to figure out what to do and retreat. So it's better to try to keep it really simple. And for those of you who are new to this, I think for the most part, most people who might find it difficult at first, by the end of the retreat, 7 days, are not ready to give it up. And that there's something they cherish about it. The silence, this noble silence of the way we are here. And there's a kind of intimacy or a kind of closeness, a kind of connectedness that happens to each other here that's very different than what can happen if we spent the whole week talking to each other. Both are probably nice, but this way of being together in community and silence and practicing together is one of the great experiences of life, a way of being in community. There's other great ways of being, but this is one of them. Welcome to bring any chair in here, if here or in the walking hall. And so you're welcome to those wonderful turquoise chairs downstairs. If you want to roll one of them up here, that's better. If you have a chair in your room, it works better. Or those black mesh chairs, there's more of them in the fire closet, the closet just next to the water fountain. You can, the folding ones there, you can bring them in here. The window seats are places you can lay down if you feel like you need to lay down. We ask that you don't reserve it for yourself, but if it's empty, you can use it. And that way, it can rotate between people through the day. And we also ask that you don't reserve for yourself both a chair and a floor cushion, just so there's more space for people to find their, you know. Tomorrow morning, after the first sitting, there's what's called Sangha service. And if those of you are new, just do your best to find your place and what you have to do. And the managers are roaming around in the morning, so they'll be close by. You can ask them if you need some assistance about where tools are or what to do. And we'll explain more as we go along. There's more details about practice discussion and how that works and other things that come along and instructions that'll happen tomorrow. But, so we'll keep making these announcements. So the next time we'll do it, it's 8:30 in the morning. So about what happens, the variety of things that happens the first full day. And so that 8:30 sitting is a place where we'll talk more. So one of the things to do now is to tell you about the theme for the retreat. Before I tell you the specific theme, I want to tell you the principle that is behind it. And that is that this practice that we do is not meant to be something that we do ourselves to cause the Dharma to grow in us. In terms of the insights that we're getting, it's not like we're not making the insights happen. The role of a meditator is to create the conditions in which something can grow and develop. So a gardener might plant a seed hoping for tomatoes, and the gardener keeps creating the conditions that are ideal for that seed to germinate, and then cares for the growing plant in the way the conditions that allows it to grow. But the gardener doesn't cause the plant to grow. If the conditions are there, the seed will grow into a tomato. If the gardener gets impatient and starts pulling on the seedling to make it grow faster, and plops out, so no, you know, puts it back in, and next day pulls it out, and you know, it's not going to grow. You can't stretch it. You have to leave it alone and tend it. And when we do this practice here, we're more like gardeners who are tending and cultivating things than we are the agent of change. And many meditators think that they hear the instructions, they go, I've got to do this, and I have to get somewhere, and it's up to me, and I'll just probably just have to try harder, and then I can do it. It's not up to you to do. It's up to you to create the conditions, to offer the conditions that something can happen. If you're too busy doing it, there's no space for something to emerge within you, something to grow and develop. So you can't just be busy practicing all the time, but you have to be continuous. And kind of like the sun is continuously shining on the plant, the sun is not causing the plant to grow. It's just another condition. And so we have the sun, the light of mindfulness, of awareness, that we try to keep present. But it's not to cause something, but rather it's kind of like making room for it and allowing something to grow. And so with that as a background, one of the things that we're cultivating in this practice are the five faculties. So we're developing something called, that I like to call confidence. Sometimes it's called faith. But we're cultivating a kind of confidence that can't be made to happen. You can't like squeeze confidence out of yourself, or, you know, put your limbs in a certain shape and then the confidence will just come. It's a deeper thing that has to grow and develop and make space for. And then there's something called virya, usually translated as energy or effort. But it's something like, I think it's something richer and deeper than simply effort and energy. I don't know what the right language is, and we can get quite in English, this word. It has in Indian languages a little bit the connotations of being heroic. And so, you know, what is this? And if that's not something we do, but something we allow for, it's some kind of strength that develops inside of us. We're cultivating a strength. I like the word strength for virya. And then there's mindfulness. In the Western Dharma scene, mindfulness is often presented as something we do. For the Buddha, he never talked about mindfulness as something to do, but as something to allow, something to enter into, something to rest in, to abide in, something to establish. It's a very different language than doing it, making it. So, but mindfulness is one of the conditions we're putting in place, like this. And then there's samadhi, a very rich word, idea, often translated as concentration. And then there's wisdom. So these are conditions that we cultivate and develop. And they allow something to grow and change and transform within us. These are the kind of the transforming, those are the things which are the transforming agents for our Dharma practice. not us. We just are supporting these five things to be there. And one of the things they support is the overcoming or the fading away or the being the medicine for some of the primary mental forces inside of us that are the condition for going in the opposite direction than the Dharma, that goes in directions of not becoming aware, not having wisdom, not having this wonderful strength, Dharma strength, not having Dharma confidence. And what are those five? They are the five hindrances. So they are, usually we say in English, sensual desire, which is much wider than maybe we associate in English around sensuality. But sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. So what we're going to talk about in this retreat, the Dharma talks, they're going to pair these two up as we go through the retreat. So just to, you know, as they're listed. So tomorrow, for example, the talk will be about sensual desire, the hindrance of it, together with Dharma faith, and kind of show how, you know, the Dharma faith is a wonderful condition, a wonderful offering, wonderful, that is a kind of a medicine for the ways that sensual desire can undermine us, can limit us. And then we'll go on from there. On Tuesday it'll be ill will and this Dharma strength. And then sloth and torpor and mindfulness. Restlessness and anxiety and samadhi. Doubt with wisdom. And we hope that in doing this as a theme, that you'll appreciate that these very human tendencies, it's called the five hindrances, they have partners, or they have medicine partners, they have that you can bring along to meet them and help you not be caught in the grip of the hindrances. Be wise about them. So that's the orientation of this retreat. So and then to begin the retreat proper, to transition into this Dharma space and noble silence, we do this ritual of refuge and precepts. But to say, call it a ritual in my mind might suggest it a lesser important role than it actually is. It's in a very important way setting the container, setting the conditions so that everyone's hearts can relax and feel safe here, because we have a shared commitment, a shared set of values that we're going to live together with. And then it's kind of known, oh, okay, this is a place, you know, where people are this way. So I think, but first maybe Inez has some, before that, do you have anything you want to say?
No, not right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
practiced. Yeah. So, as Gil said, traditionally at the beginning of the retreat, we'll chant the refuges and precepts. And I'll talk a little bit about the refuges, and then we'll chant them, and then Inez will talk about the precepts. And the three refuges are the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And there's this beautiful quote from the Dhammapada, which is a text attributed to the Buddha. It says, "When someone is going for refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, then this is the supreme refuge. By going to such a refuge, one is released from all suffering." End quote. Maybe we all have the experience that we don't take refuge in a supreme refuge, but rather in something that is might not be so helpful, like food or Netflix, maybe not so much on retreat. But those kind of things can give us some comfort, can feel like a refuge, but they're not those supreme refuges that lead to the release from suffering. Well, the Buddha tells us like if we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, this will lead to release from suffering. So what does it mean to take refuge in the Buddha? Or to go for refuge to the Buddha, as it's sometimes translated? Well, the Buddha was an awakened being, while he was also a human being, just like all of us. So we could see the taking refuge in the Buddha, or going for refuge to the Buddha, as that we all have this possibility for awakening. Since the Buddha could do it as a human being, maybe we can do it as well. And for some people, awakening might sound a bit lofty. So we could maybe see it also as just becoming a little bit freer from suffering, just a little bit at a time. So we can go to refuge in this possibility to be a little bit more free from suffering. And then the Dharma. The Dharma is the teaching of the Buddha. And we might all have had some sort of benefit from the teachings of the Buddha, or some sort of reason why we're here, why we think this might help us, or this might be wholesome for us to be here. Also, when we're participating online, of course. And we can take refuge in this helpfulness that the Dharma can give us, the teachings can give us. We might know for ourselves that the teachings, if we practice, that something happens, even if it's just a tiny bit that we've experienced. And this we can also take refuge in. And then the Sangha. Traditionally seen, the Sangha is the community of those who have at least awakened a little bit. That was in the time of the Buddha. But nowadays, we usually see Sangha also as those who practice the teachings of the Buddha. And now that we're all here at IRC practicing together, or in the Zoom room together, we can inspire each other, and we're not alone. We can take refuge in that we're not alone in our practice. There are also others who practice, and we can draw our inspiration and our refuge in that. When taking refuge is something that comes from the heart. It's not something that we can force upon each other. It is a feeling like, oh, I do trust the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha to be a safe place to go for refuge. And this trust can come from practicing. From also, it can sometimes come from having an example. So in this way, we know for ourselves. So the refuge, taking refuge, is about finding a safe haven. And sometimes when I go through something difficult, I know that the Dharma will help me. If I just practice, I know I will get through it, even though it might be very difficult. So through trying out this practice, this was a gradual process that I started to trust this from happening, that I could fall back on the Dharma. And on retreat, we can take refuge in practicing together in the Sangha. We can see the others practicing in the hall, doing them walking meditation, or seeing others also attend the Zoom room. And sometimes when I'm on retreat or practicing at home, I sometimes look at the Buddha statue and I see the Buddha sitting there so peacefully, and then I can take refuge in the Buddha. Like, the Buddha is not stressed out nor upset. Why should I be? So this taking refuge is not just a ceremony at the beginning of the retreat. It's actually something we can really actively use in our retreat and also in our daily lives. So let's take the refuges together now. I'll do call and response, and it's going to be in Pali, the ancient language in which the oldest scriptures were written down in. And the first three lines are the same. They're the homage to the Buddha, the perfectly enlightened one. And they go like this. And my voice, by the way, is not great, so sorry about that. But as Gil said today, how's your heart? Is your heart okay? Yeah, my heart is okay. So it comes from a kind heart. Namo Tassa Bhagavato. Arahato Sam. Oh, sorry, I'm blinking. Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa.
Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato.
Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa.
Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato.
Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa.
Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa.
And the next lines are the taking refuge for the first time. Buddhang Saranang.
Buddhang Saranam.
Gacchami.
Gacchami.
Dhammam Saranam.
Dhammam Saranam.
Gacchami.
Gacchami.
Sanghang Saranam.
Sanghang Saranam.
Gacchami.
Gacchami.
And I'll take refuge for the second time. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranam Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranam Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami.
Tatiyampi Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranam Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranam Gacchami.
And we'll take refuge for the third time and last time. Tatyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami.
Tatyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami.
Tatyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami.
Tatyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami.
Tatyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami.
Tatyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami.
Thank you.
Now I'll say a little bit about the precepts, the five precepts. Central to the Dharma, to this practice, is a deep dedication to non-harming. When we pay attention, we can easily see that when we harm somebody else or harm ourselves, it limits our ability to be happy, to feel connected, to be at ease in the world. The times when we tend to hurt others or ourselves are times when we're actually attached to what we want or don't want. If we're causing harm, we're actually practicing attachment and clinging. When we live our lives with integrity and we're dedicated to not harming, we feel blameless. This blamelessness gives us a sense of trusting ourselves, of confidence in ourselves, which is one of the five faculties that Gil just spoke about. This deep sense of confidence that can arise in us that allows us to really relax deeply, deeply into our practice. At the beginning of a retreat, we traditionally connect with this dedication to non-harming by reciting these five precepts. It helps create a supportive container for all of us practicing together. And as we said, those of us in this physical hall, which has extended into all these other little extra rooms, and those of us in the virtual sangha, the virtual meditation hall. We are all, as we practice here, we're all agreeing to bring kindness and care to all our interactions with each other and with ourselves and with all the living creatures that there are many of in this center, in this beautiful woods that we have here. The precepts are not commandments, they're not rules. They're considered training precepts. They're about really purifying our hearts, purifying our intentions. The heart that cares, the heart that takes care of each other, is a heart that's at ease. These precepts, and so many of us, you know, some of us are doing them for the first time, and some of us have done these like 50 times or more. And for each of us, it's something we grow with, we grow into, we deepen. So I'd like to encourage you, as we all agree to them, to do it wholeheartedly. Really connect with each one of them. I'll say just a little about each of them, how I relate to them. The first one is to refrain from killing. Most of us are pretty good at not killing people. But how are we about the animal life around us? How do we care for it? And I'd like to include, when I think about this precepts, that to treat all living beings with dignity, to regard them with dignity, to see them, to know, to respect every single living being that we encounter. The second precept is to refrain from taking that which is not given. For me, that includes appreciating what we receive. When something is given, to really allow it to enter us. The third one is to refrain from sexual misconduct. On a retreat like this, it means not having any sexual activities. But it typically means not causing harm with our sexuality in our daily lives. So for the retreat, we just abstain from everything. But at other times, it really helps to consider how we use our sexual energy. The fourth precept is to refrain from lying and to speak truthfully. For the retreat, Gil spoke about noble silence, only speaking when needed, only communicating when needed. And when we do that, we do it respectfully, we do it gently, we do it with sensitivity. I prioritize speaking kindly. And then the last one is to refrain from intoxicants that cloud the mind. And, it means obviously not taking drugs, or any kind of intoxicant that clouds the mind. But I know some of you may not have locked up your devices, some of you who are in the physical hall. And so really see if you cannot be tempted by them. Really commit to leaving them aside and to think of them maybe as an intoxicant. Most people in today's culture have this addictive quality to the way they relate to their devices. It does toxify the mind to doom scroll, to compulsively do these things. And so allow this week to be a week of a full, complete rest from these devices. Those of you in the virtual hall, have a little more temptation there because you obviously have to use one of those devices for the retreat. But what I really like to recommend in that case is to really bow to your device so that you treat it with the respect for yourself in relation to it. So just like Mario Lane did the call and response on the refuges, we'll do that with the precepts. But since they're in English, it'll be a little bit easier to just repeat after me. So for this, the duration of this retreat, I agree to refrain from killing and to act with reverence for all forms of life. I agree to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I agree to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I agree to refrain from sexual activity. I agree to maintain noble silence and to only speak when needed.
I agree to maintain
noble silence and to refrain from intoxicants that cloud the mind. And thank you so much for agreeing to these precepts, for starting this retreat, for bringing your heart here. So now, for those of you who want to go to bed early, please go to bed and have very sweet dreams. And some of you might want to keep practicing or have a cup of tea. And you're welcome to do so. So thank you and good night.
And I would like to add just a little bit here that if you're a practice leader, which means you'll be sitting up here to ring the bell at the end of the sitting, and maybe this was explained to you already. You know, if you sit in a chair, you can sit in this chair. And then if you sit on the cushion, you can sit in this place here. And the bell may or may not be nearby. You can just bring it and put it close to you wherever you feel it's appropriate. And if you've never rung the bell before, you might come here during one of the breaks after a meal or something and try hitting it. Because it's pretty common for someone who's never hit it before to think they're hitting it lightly, but it comes out as a big clang. And that you can't undo. But if you hit it too softly, you can undo that. You can make it a little louder. So you could, you better start soft and then you can always do it louder, you know, so you get along. But more importantly, I would recommend that all of you who are up here ringing the bell, the first day, there's the schedule is here on the stage here. And if you could just check it, and make sure you understand when the time is over, because some of the sittings are 30 minutes, some are 45 minutes, one is 35 minutes, and so it gets easy to get it confused. And so just check the list before. So it's right up here, and so you can kind of see. And then finally, for the person who's ringing the 6 is sitting up here for the 6 o'clock sitting, because of the first day is the Sangha service, and it's a little bit more to kind of, you know, figure out. Maybe just ring it 2 minutes early, you know, 6:38, or approximately. Just to have a teeny bit extra time, I think it's nice for the first day. So, thank you, and sleep well.